Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte. Episode 26, recorded September 28th, 2011. Guy Kawasaki. This episode of Triangulation brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. It's time for Triangulation, the show that really has become the kind of signature for me, the signature show on Twit, where we interview the most interesting, the most intelligent, the most...
And we got one today.
What happened? We ran out of people.
Ran
out of people, so you had to call me, and I have to be on Skype at the
moment. We do. We interview the most interesting people. We do it every week on Wednesdays, Tom Merritt and I, and that's why we call it Triangulation, because you, Guy Kawasaki, are the third leg of the stool today.
The base of the triangle. Base.
They say a tripod is very stable.
Yeah.
So you're making us stable. Okay. People probably don't have to know who Guy, you know, don't need introduction because Guy Kawasaki is literally a legend in a number of areas, particularly in marketing and startups and entrepreneurial endeavors. He is the former chief evangelist at Apple. He's a book author. In fact, your Art of the Start was the first thing I read before I started my own startup.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Was that a mistake? he's a fun guy, as you can see. He actually was with a guy who, one of the guys behind marketing the Apple Macintosh back in, 1984. Now, he has a startup incubator now called the Garage Technology Ventures. And he also does something called R All Top, which is a really kind of cool magazine stand for the internet. He used to be a big time blogger, but now I think, right. Yeah, because I think of Google Plus. Now I think it's all Google Plusing. Hello, Guy Kawasaki.
Hi.
Your latest book is Enchantment.
Yes.
The Art of Changing Hearts, Minds, and something else.
Actions.
I knew it was one of them. What's Enchantment about?
It's about $18.
And available at bookstores everywhere.
I bet you didn't say that to Good Morning Peoria.
It explains how to create these relationships with people that are deep, mutually beneficial, and voluntary and long-lasting. Think of, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, sort of updated 70 years later.
When you say enchantment, what do you mean by enchantment? You mean like a magical spell? What do you mean by
in
enchantment?
No, not magical at all. It's about influence and persuasion and, you know, being likable and trustworthy. It's pretty basic stuff.
Neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah.
Oh,
not
that's
quite.
Trustworthy. Yeah, let me see. What words can I use to influence you? That's true. See, that's part of the problem with marketing in general and charisma in particular. It's not very cool to do it, right? You have to be marketing without appearing to market. Is that right?
Well, I mean, yes, but you know, people who are not likable and not trustworthy will not be enchanting. I mean, you can't be a total schmuck about it.
You can't force it.
No, you have to, there's some basic, you know, baseline of decency that you have to be.
But yeah, I, as soon as someone starts to catch on that you're trying to market to them, that you're trying to get across a message, they immediately start to not want to trust you. How do you get past that barrier?
Well, I mean, really, everybody's marketing something, right?
Sure.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the acid test is, are you doing something only for your benefit, or is it mutual benefit? So, you know, arguably when Apple sells you something, it's mutually beneficial, right? You feel more powerful, more creative, you know, better. Whereas some other companies, they're doing it strictly for themselves.
Right. And that comes across too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which category?
I think it's pretty obvious.
Which category do you put Facebook in?
Facebook. Facebook is not.
Hey, who's that? Wait a minute. There's a face. Who's that?
This is my son, Nate.
Hey, Nate, with the California bear on your shirt. How you doing, dude?
Yeah, I just spoke in Berkeley, so I brought him a shirt.
Ah, nice.
That's a great shirt.
Bears.
That's a great shirt. How old is he?
Nate is 6.
That's a great age.
He's my youngest. So
where are they?
They are. Where are you guys?
We're in Petaluma.
Petaluma.
Sonoma County. Where are you? Nate, where are you? Shh. He's learned not to share his location. It's a secret.
Yeah, that's right.
Good privacy policy on Nate.
Are you a stranger? Then I'm not telling you.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to put you back on the spot now that I've let you off the hook. I'm going to put you back on the hook. Facebook.
I'd say Facebook is mutually beneficial. That Facebook obviously is making $2 or $3 billion, but I mean, they provide such a service to the people who use them. I have no problem with Facebook.
But a lot of people criticize Facebook feeling like, well, they're just trying to push to see as much as they can get out of me, and they begrudgingly give me anything.
But you know what? I mean, that's a crock of shit. And let me tell you why. So, you know, Facebook, they're hosting all these pictures, they're hosting all this text, they're doing all this stuff. And you know, like, well, do people expect all this stuff for free? I mean, there is such a sense of, on the internet, of entitlement that, you know, my time is so valuable that for you to have my eyeball is a privilege and an honor. And forget the fact that I'm taking up your bandwidth, I'm taking up your disk space, I'm taking up all this stuff. I'm doing you a favor by you and using your service, Facebook, so you should do all this stuff for me. You know what? I mean, that's like, Leo, if I invite you to my house to come over for dinner, and you come over and you say, Guy, I don't like to eat the stuff you eat. I don't like to eat at the time you eat. I don't like the other people who are here.
That's a good point.
Like, who's doing who the favor?
Right.
You know, don't freaking come to my house.
It's a free service. It's a free service. How about Google? You feel like Google is a mutual benefit or taking advantage?
Mutual benefit. You can't become so successful as Google or Facebook without mutual benefit.
There has to be a value to the user.
Yeah. I think when you hear these people, what I call female dogging, it's because they have this sense of entitlement. And I don't know where that comes from. I mean, it's not true in the analog world. I mean, do you go into a restaurant and say, feed me for free or I refuse to be here? I mean,
that's a very good point.
Is it just bad habits, you know, because we got so much for free on the internet for so long?
I guess. I mean, but still, I mean, why do you think that applies only to the internet, that you should get everything for free? I don't understand that. Having said that, I don't know how you put that horse back in the barn either. Mm-hmm.
There is a perception problem.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that it's not so much that people expect them to give it to them for free, but they just want to know. There's an implied contract. Yeah, okay, I'm going to get something from Facebook, and I'm going to, in return, give you some personal information. But there is somewhat of an implied contract with both of these companies that you will keep it to yourself, that you won't abuse our relationship.
Yes. I mean, that's true. It's very interesting that story that broke yesterday about even when you press click the like button and you're signed out, Facebook still tracks you.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty interesting stuff. I must say that, you know, that's the equivalent is I invited you to my house for a free dinner, but leave your wallet. You know, I'm going to hold your wallet. I mean,
right. Like, what do you got in it? I'd like to see.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's something odd about that.
This is a challenge for everybody who works for a big company trying to induce customers to trust them, to buy their product. Is trust important for any company? I guess it is, isn't it?
Totally.
Yeah. We do business differently than we used to 50 years ago because of the internet, do you think?
Do you mean that in a negative or positive way?
Because
I could actually build the case that it's positive.
I would agree with you. Well, one thing the internet's done is empowered consumers. This is what the Clue Train Manifesto was all about, is that consumers in a world of perfect knowledge, you can't rip them off so well. You can't overcharge them very easily. You can't get away with the kinds of things that people have accused some companies of doing, like Facebook, in terms of privacy. You know, there's a real irony, because it was Wall Street Journal that was beating up on Facebook over this like cookie, and they just announced that they're changing their privacy policy to track people by name. You know, after beating up on all these companies on their privacy issues, oh, by the way, we'd like to.
And that's an example. You know, companies are big, right? The reporters aren't the ones setting the privacy policy, but you got to realize you're working for a company, too.
That's a good point, too. You guys are so even-handed. I don't know how I'm going to start a fight here.
In fact, they're working for Rupert, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
We don't need a tracking cookie. We'll just tap your phone.
Right. I mean, what the hell? Yeah.
So you've been using Google Plus a lot.
I love Google Plus.
First of all, let's talk about that, and then I want to know if you think that the new Facebook might be a challenger. But let's talk about Google Plus. Why do you like Google Plus so much?
I like Google Plus. Let me count the ways. First, I love the fact that the messages can be longer than 140 characters. Second,
Nobody ever accused Guy Kawasaki of being spare in his prose.
Secondly, I like the fact that you can place inline pictures, not simply a link.
They look good, too.
Yeah. Third, the pictures are big, as you can see right there. That's a picture of a box of a lens.
Scott Kelby gave you his 300, huh?
No, he loaned me a 300, and then Nikon sent me one, so now I can send his back.
Oh, good.
Well, that's the way to do it.
You know, you could never do an album like that on Twitter,
right? No, it's fantastic, isn't it?
So I like the inline pictures. I love the threading that, you know, the analogy I like to use is Google Plus is like a swimming pool, and everything you do, good or bad, stays in the pool, whereas Twitter is like a river.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you say something, it's gone 2 seconds
That's
later.
So true.
You'll never see it.
Yeah.
Which can be good or bad, you know, because if somebody says, you know, LOL, a useless comment, that thing is gone a second later. On the other hand, with Google Plus, LOL stays there for a long time as you scroll through all this. So, you know, it can be good or bad. So I like the threading. I also love the notification, so that if somebody actually types in Plus and Guy Kawasaki, I will get notified that that person said something to me, so I can respond. Whereas with Google Plus, with Twitter and Facebook, you're never quite sure if when you respond they see it, and you're never quite sure, and they're never quite sure if they responded to you, if you saw it. So unless you've turned off notification, I mean, it's much more likely that you can engage in a continuous conversation.
Now, come on. You have 146,996 people circling you. How can you possibly follow the notifications?
I do.
You do. You go through those.
I really do. Well, one thing is most people don't do a plus mention. They simply respond, right? So, you know, this is kind of an existential question. If someone doesn't plus mention you in the forest, did he really plus mention you?
That's we should explain. If when you say Guy Kawasaki, you could just type Guy Kawasaki, or you could do plus Guy Kawasaki, and then it will actually highlight that. It'll send you an email if you ask for. Do you look at the email notification? Do you actually get email notifications?
Oh yeah!
Oh my
God!
Oh,
wow! I had to turn those off. Yeah, I liked the idea of it, but it was just too many of them.
Well, I feel like I have, this is what differentiates me from, I don't know, say...
everybody else. Everybody else.
Well, but I love interacting. Twitter was so inefficient for interacting. I love interacting. I don't mind interacting. And you know, Leo, the secret to my success in life, what little success I've had, is because I'm willing to grind it out.
Yeah. You and remind me a little of Gary Vaynerchuk, because I've talked to Gary, and you know, he does all of this. He talks to people, thanks people. You know, and I think, Gary, there's not enough time in the day, but both of you have been very successful by really making contact with people, by connecting.
Well, the difference between me and Gary is that I don't swear.
Not as much.
We don't have a filter named after you in our chat room, as we do.
No.
Did you know that, by the way?
No. What?
If you swear in our chat room, it replaces the swear words with Vaynerchuk.
No.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like There's a lot of like Vaynerchuk U's around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right now, our chat room is full of people saying Vaynerchuk.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
Hey, chat mods, give people a break because they're showing this off.
Yeah.
You could.
That's very funny.
Don't ban anybody for doing that. Yeah. Yeah.
But so you don't like it.
Can you make it so anytime somebody types the word guy, it comes out enchantment with my ISBN number or something?
We can do that.
Look See, at that now that's the business model. Leo, that's the business model. I want to buy the word the.
You know, we've never sold keywords in the chat room. That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Finally, we figured out how to make a little money on the side here out of this altruistic venture that we call the Twit. So Enchantment's been a while now since it came out. It's been very successful. Are you on to another book now, or are you just taking it easy a little bit? What are you up to these days?
No, I think I'm going to write a book about Google Plus. I love Google Plus. I want to write the de facto Google Plus, standard book.
It's kind of, though, good friend Gina Trapani got very excited about something called Google Wave, wrote a book called Google Wave, The Complete Guide to Google Wave. It's not selling very much anymore.
No. Google Plus has gotten picked up a lot better than Google Wave.
I know, but it's always risky. You know, it's moving so fast now. Let me ask you about what you think about this new Facebook timeline and the ticker and all the stuff Facebook's doing, which is clearly a direct response to Google Plus.
Well, I think the best thing that ever happened to Facebook is Google Plus. They might not look at it that way, but I do. But I have to tell you that my presence on Facebook is primarily a fan page, and none of this stuff affects the fan page yet, right?
Right.
Right.
So,
They want you to replace that fan page with a subscribe button.
But how do I get all those? Not yet.
They're apparently making a tool. Gina Trapani told me that today. They're making a tool that will take all your fan page followers, likers, I guess you call them, and transfer them over to subscribers onto your page. But what that does is it ruins your regular page now.
Well, but when it makes you pay more attention, right? Because when you post, you have to decide, is this a public post or not? Right now, you don't have to make that decision.
Right.
But can I ask you perhaps a dumb question? So when I post something on Facebook, when I post something on Twitter or Google Plus, I know that on Twitter, 400,000 people can see it.
Right.
And on Google Plus, 140,000 people can see it. When I do that on Facebook, is Facebook still using EdgeRank and, figuring out
who's
going to see
it? You have no idea who's going to see what.
I don't understand
You can give permission. You can say, I want this to be public. But as you point out, what they do is they have a very complicated, not understood algorithm choosing what shows up on your wall posts there.
Okay,
there's the stream on the right-hand side now that
that's
everything goes into. Yeah. So I don't know how that changes
but
the calculus.
But that's very Twitter-like, this ticker.
Yeah, but still, I really work very hard on my posts.
Right.
And so the thought of... I send it into this big hopper, and all of a sudden, one out of five people might see it. Now, again, I don't want to be a hypocrite. Facebook is doing this for me for free, so, this is a free dinner. I understand that.
Right.
But Google Plus and Twitter is also a free dinner, and I know I can reach 100% of the people who follow me. I think that's kind of a fundamental flaw, no?
Yeah.
I mean...
Just because the dinner's free doesn't mean you have to say you loved it.
Yeah. I think the equivalent is, so I go on an NPR interview. Let's say I get interviewed by Tech Nation or Fresh Air or something. So, for promotional reasons, I go on Fresh Air or I go on Tech Nation, or I go on This American Life or whatever. And then NPR decides of their 25 million listeners, which 5 million get to see it. I mean, that's something's wrong there. I don't get it.
I mean, do you still enjoy... the hurly-burly of the tech community, of the tech industry. You love watching these horse races between Facebook and Google Plus. Is that excitement to you?
I must admit that I have a much more pragmatic attitude right now that I think for Google Plus and Twitter and Facebook, they are means to an end for me. And the end is selling more books or building my brand. I don't really, I think what's changed in my life fundamentally is I have four children.
Yeah, that'll kill your enjoyment.
Yeah. And so I have four children all under the age of college.
Oh, boy.
And so it's enormous time that they take. I mean, everyone has two sports and tutoring and, school and all that.
Well, aren't you lucky that you could spend time doing that, Guy?
Yeah, well, I am.
That's fantastic.
But that's why, I don't really give a damn about going to every TechCrunch demo, whatever. I never go to those things. I only go to conferences if I'm speaking.
Me
I
too.
Never go just for the hell of it.
Well, I don't have kids, and I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just those things are just they're
endless more circle
show
jerk.
Than
it's
they
just
are
not fun
for getting something out.
Yeah,
of
speaking
usually.
Of circles.
Yeah. Also, for you, Leo, I'm sure it's true too that if I could go to those things anonymously,
maybe it
would be fun, maybe, but. Going who as I am, unless I tell people I'm Jackie Chan, which even that would create a different set of problems.
Yeah, right.
Everybody wants to pitch me, and I just can't handle more pitches.
I don't have that problem.
Is Garage Ventures still investing and still mentoring entrepreneurs?
We slowed down because we're trying to raise another fund, so we've allocated follow-on investments, but it's new investments are really slowed down. So, that's another frustrating point. So everybody's trying to pitch me and we're not making new investments. So, Leo, in my perfect world, I would just be on Google Plus and I would play hockey.
You're retired. Really? You're retired, dude.
No, I'm not retired.
Wait till those young kids start going to college and you got to make the tuition. It's like $200,000 to send a kid to college these days.
Trust me, I know.
Well,
my kids are in private school right now, so I'm getting...
You're already doing that.
So that's why I have to keep working.
That's when I stop. When both kids are out of college, that's when you're going to get... When I'm going to be on that boat I keep talking about. I'm gone.
How old are they now? Where are they
I have one kid in college, one 19 and one 17. Is junior in high school, so it's imminent.
Where's the 19-year-old?
She's going to Bard in New York State. She's actually taking this year off, which saved me a lot of money. She said, I want to spend a year traveling. And I said, okay, traveling's a lot cheaper than Bard.
Well,
did the math. Get this, Guy.
Yeah?
Every class, I don't mean like the whole semester of classes. I mean, individual class is $360. Every class.
You mean Monday at 8?
Monday at 8.
Every session.
$360 bucks, like that. It's twice as expensive as a psychotherapist. And you're going like to five of them a day.
But don't you think that at some point people are going to look at the, the return on
$200,000? I think they already are. I think there's a really big question of what are we doing?
Khan Academy has brought that up. The access to classes where you don't get credit, but you can just sit and learn has brought that up. And there's a few people campaigning saying, don't waste your time going to school. Do you agree with that?
But all these schools, they still have 8 applicants for every position.
Well, let me ask you, Guy, about your own kids. Are you going to take the chance and say, you don't have to go to college? No. You're going to say, no, you're going to college just in case.
I understand.
Who
that.
Wants to gamble with their own kid's future? Gamble with somebody else's future.
But there's got to be some economic model where the marginal cost and the marginal return, there's got to be that place where they hit, right? And it cannot be that every college degree is worth $250,000 to everybody.
It's not.
But, I have a theory. So my theory is that one of the untapped industries in America is education. We have great education, so we should make that's something that China can't do better than us. I mean, who can do education better than us? So
it's true. They all come from all over the world to American colleges.
Right. But, and so that should be part of our gross national product. I mean, we do that so well.
Well, I don't know if it's that we do
enough to make a lot of money.
I don't know if it's that we do it so well or that they do it so poorly in so many other nations. In France, it's really you go to a lecture, you memorize the lecture notes, you do not have a discussion, you are tested on what you remember from the lecture, and that's it. You're done. And I think it's in Asia, it's very similar, where it's very focused on results, on tests. We're moving in that direction in the U.S. That's something I'd love to ask you about.
Well, you're talking about college education, not primary education.
But no, this is college education as well in the rest of the world. You focus on innovation, right? I mean, that's really what powers everything that we do here in Silicon Valley. It is the one thing we seem to have a little bit of a monopoly on in the U.S. maybe because of our education system, at least
maybe.
Compared to other education systems, I think it does foster creativity. Do you think that the pace of innovation, that we will be able to continue that monopoly?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's a monopoly. And even if I thought it was a monopoly, I would never say that because, you know, every Indian, every Pakistani, every
There's
Israeli,
innovation.
Every,
no,
every
you're
they're
right.
going to get all pissed
well,
off.
Oxford
and, you know,
is going to have
right.
an opinion about it. Yeah.
Nothing yeah.
else.
Although, you know, it's been a long time since I used anything from Oxford. But I think it's cheaper than ever to be an entrepreneur. Because everything you need is free.
It's
I mean,
amazing, isn't it?
Right? People are cheap. Cloud is cheap. You don't buy servers anymore. Marketing is cheap if you know how to use Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus and blogs. So marketing is cheap. Nobody rents an office anymore. Everything's virtual. I mean, tools are open source. What do you spend money on anymore? That's why you don't need venture capitalists.
Aha. So you put yourself out of business. You've been so successful, nobody needs you anymore.
No, it's not that I've been so successful. It's that these external forces have changed the economics of startups.
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be any shortage of venture capitalists or funding going around. I mean, they're using the money for something.
Well, that's the problem. You've got all these rich people. They can't put their money in a CD. They got bills to pay.
Well, I mean, you know, this is like if you're a cocaine dealer and a big shipment's coming in, you're going to get rid of it somehow. I mean,
here's right. what you do. You get Ashton Kutcher to put a sticker for your company on his laptop. Did you see what he did on Two and a Half Men?
Yeah, I saw that.
He has stickers on his laptop for Foursquare, Flipboard, Hipmunk, and Chegg, all four of which he has invested in. He used Two and a Half Men to advertise his companies.
Yeah.
CBS was a little shocked.
Maybe.
It's just
you know,
stickers
Mike,
on a laptop.
Mike Arrington should make it Three and a Half Men. Then he can do his like whole thing about his venture capital fund, and it'd be funny.
20 million viewers saw those stickers.
Yeah, and do you think it moved the needle at all for any of those companies?
Dennis Crowley, Dens of Foursquare, said, check out A+K showing some Foursquare and GroupMe laptop sticker love on Two and a Half Men. He was excited about it.
Seriously, do you think it moved the needle at all? I don't.
Probably not.
CBS, probably the only people who noticed him are people who already use those services.
CBS says it's going to blur in reruns. It's going to blur them. Unless they pay for the advertising. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, if I were Nikon, I would be pissed because, you know, I'm paying Ashton Kutcher to like, and
that's
he didn't
true.
Put a Nikon sticker.
He didn't put a Nikon on there.
Right.
Yeah, like, what's
I just
the story?
Want to point out that there is a, underneath this piece of black tape under your head, there is a brand name, but we blacked it out because they didn't pay us. We had to buy these TVs.
Wait, I got to get my, 1 second here. Hang on.
Get his laptop stickers. He's going to go get his plugs. We're talking to Guy Kawasaki. He's the author of a brand new, relatively new book called Enchantment, which is enchanting. The very first evangelist in the tech community. Yes,
Leo.
Go ahead. Yes. Oh, look at that. That's the 300 millimeter.
Yeah, speaking of Nikon.
Say hello to my little friend.
All right, Scarface. What the hell is that?
This is a 300 millimeter Nikon lens. 2.8. I use it to
2.8? Holy cow.
I use it to photograph my kids' football games. Nikon just sent me one. So I have to announce that because otherwise the FTC will come arrest me.
Are they going
to
let you keep that?
I don't know, but you know, it's possession is 9/10 of the law.
You're
right?
Not a tech journalist, guy. You could do anything you gosh darn want. Keep it. If I were you, I would keep it.
You know, I mean, hell, this sure as hell beats a Nokia phone.
That was a Palm Pre, and I didn't keep it. All right.
Okay.
Why would you?
Say hello to my little
friend. Oh my goodness! That's fun. So, is photography a big hobby of yours, Guy?
Yeah, I love photography. You know, when you have four kids and two are playing football, one's playing soccer, everybody in Silicon Valley is trying to be something they're not, and I'm trying to be a photographer. So,
well, you're not alone. Tom Anderson is getting into photography. He's got Trey Ratcliffe helping him out, also on Google Plus. Google yeah. Plus is starting to be the photographer's
social. I'll give you the marketing positioning for what I would do if I were Google Plus.
All right.
I would position it vis-a-vis Facebook. I'd say Facebook is for people, but Google Plus is for passions.
Oh, I like
so
it.
So if you want to just hook up with your same old classmates, your same old relatives, your same old friends, they are already on Facebook. You should just stay there. But if you want to broaden your horizons, and let's say a passion is photography, you would get more value out of being on Google Plus and hanging out with those photographers who you don't know personally than you would trying to do that on Facebook. So if it were me, I would have these kind of, you know, little mantras that Google Plus is passions, not people. Or if you're a kid, I would say it's passions, not parents.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're a young teenage girl, I would say it's passions, not perverts.
No, yeah. That's so good. You really nailed it there. It's a community of shared interests.
Right. Of strangers.
Yeah. Facebook's a family reunion and Google Plus is a party.
Right. So, you know, that's the way to go after Facebook, because you read all these people, they say, well, I came to Google Plus and it's a ghost town. Nobody writes to me. Nobody does anything. I can't find any of my friends and relatives. Well, you're using it wrong. You're supposed to, you know, search for your passions of photography or hockey or tech or whatever and find new people, not just hook up with your old tired people.
I will say, I have
poor guy.
Replaced
we gotta get
Twitter.
Him. We got to get Google Guy Plus. A house that's not on the train tracks.
Yeah, right.
I got to say that.
I know. Well, the door's open. When Nate came in, he opened the door and he left it open.
It's okay. It's hot out there. It's okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But good. No, Google Plus has not replaced Twitter for me, but it has replaced Facebook. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy. Twitter seems to be like the cockroach of social networks. It can survive anything because of its restrictions. You use it for a very particular thing. Is that true for you?
What do you use Twitter for that you cannot do with Google Plus?
What I use Twitter for is just broadcast, short, quick. Like I want to catch up with something, I want to put a pithy phrase out there, maybe engage in a quick back and forth using the at reply. Google Plus is more significant.
It does take
more time. I'm
more
committed to it. Yeah. I want to write something out that shows thought. I can't get away with a quick and dirty thing because people know I could have taken more time. So I do take more time. Twitter excuses it a little. It's the difference between writing a haiku and a sonnet, I guess.
Well, it's because it's the difference between a river and a pool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the river and standing water is a good analogy for that.
I'm full of good analogies.
You are. You're the master of
analogies. Is that what it is?
You know, I work for two people who are great at analogies. One, of course, is Steve Jobs. But the second one is Jean-Louis Gasset.
Mm. Oh, so, I love Jean-Louis. You know, I read his Monday newsletter every week. I just think he really does a great job. Very insightful blogger. Let's talk about Steve. You worked with him during the Macintosh era. And, you know, I mean, I don't think there's any question, brilliant, visionary fellow.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Apple without Steve Jobs is going to be like?
Well, you know, for a hardware company like Apple, for the next, year or year and a half, the product pipeline is set, right?
They got momentum.
Yeah. So, you know, iPhone 5, iPhone 6, whatever, that's laid in granite. The question is, what happens after that? So now we have two scenarios. One scenario is Steve has inculcated his values and his DNA so deeply into Apple that it can go on forever, using the word forever loosely. Just like, you know, I've been to Disneyland twice this summer.
Yeah, Walt's
not there. And, you know, I still have a great time. You know, it's not like I went there and say, oh, man, it's just the lacks the passion anymore. So that would be one scenario. The other scenario is, you know, now that dad is gone, all the little kids will fight. And before, dad said, you know, when I rub three fingers, it's going to scroll up or down, or it's going to scroll sideways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the trash can will be in the right-hand corner, and it's going to have four vertical lines. And when you put something in, it's going to bulge. So dad made the decision. Now dad's not around. So are the kids going to fight? Or are the MBAs going to take over Apple? And instead of fighting, the MBAs are going to say, let's have a focus group.
Right.
Let's ask our customers. And the day you hear that Apple's doing focus group is the day that Apple's dead.
Very good point. You know, that's a really important point. In fact, do you think that's what happened to Microsoft?
I don't know. I mean, Microsoft just prints money, but wow.
You wouldn't want to be there now.
It's still printing money. But look at the success of Xbox. I mean, go figure, right? Xbox is so successful.
But people always bring up Xbox. It's really the exception that proves the rule, because Yeah. And then what else?
Other than Windows and Xbox.
Windows is an example of a product that was set in stone 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And is
still incredibly successful. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's dominant.
I guess I shouldn't say there's anything wrong with Microsoft.
Well, what do you guys think of HP?
Now, there's a story, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing, huh? If you sat down and said, how can we screw up a franchise?
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't think you could do a better job.
No kidding. Will Meg Whitman be enough to save HP?
I don't know. I mean, I like her. I know her. But I don't know. I mean,
that's a challenging job.
Well, a lot of the knocks on her have been she hasn't been in this level of enterprise before. She was very successful at eBay, but this is
she's never sold hardware.
That was a consumer focused company. Do you think that is going to be an issue for her, or is the fact that she's competent overrule that?
I think the fact that she's competent will overrule that. I mean, you know, if you gave me a choice between someone who ran NCR and someone who ran eBay, I would pick eBay.
Yeah, I guess you're right, huh?
Right, so. But, you know, what I can't understand is if you look at the composition of the HP board, and I think there's 15 of them, which is 2x too many.
Yeah.
And of the 15, something like 4 or 5 are private equity. Like, I don't understand it. Why are there so many finance types on the HP board?
Why is that a problem, Guy?
Well, because those finance types, I mean, they live on, you know, Fifth Avenue, and they have assistants to help their assistants do their assisting. And so, it's like so counter to all of personal computing.
I learned so much from the Art of the Start. Tell us, if we were going to put a board together who would you put on the board? Who are you looking for? What makes a great board of directors?
Well, a great board of directors has various roles. So, one, you need dad. And what dad does is dad is the taskmaster, and dad tells you, you know, what you can and cannot do. You also need mom. Mom makes you feel good, makes you feel warm and fuzzy, loves you unconditionally. So you need mom for when you screw up and dad is smacking you around.
Good.
You need Jerry Maguire. Jerry Maguire is the guy who has the Rolodex, right?
And
he can call up Jeff Bezos. He can call up Bill Gates. He can call up Barack Obama. I mean, he can call up anybody. So you need Jerry Maguire. You also need Freeman Dyson. You need someone, a technologist who's going to tell the rest of the board, these guys are smoking crack. These guys are defying rules of thermodynamics. This cannot be done.
Right.
And then you need a nerd. You need a nerd who says, everybody has done this with 65 transistors, and I tell you, it can be done with 2. So as I look at it, you know, I think Mark Andreessen is good for the HP board.
Sure.
I think Ray Lane is good for the HP board because he understands, you know, enterprise software. They're definitely lacking a nerd. If I were them, I would call up Woz and beg Woz to come on the HP board.
Perfect.
Is Ray Lane dad in this analogy? That seems about right.
I think Ray Lane is dad. And, you know, if Meg Whitman doesn't succeed, then guess who the next CEO will be?
Ray Lane?
Yeah. and guess how long it'll take from the time they decide Meg isn't the next CEO till Ray Lane is the next CEO? Roughly 3 days.
Are you surprised that Ray didn't take a charge this time?
Well, I mean, if I were him, why would I?
He probably didn't want to.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, when you have more money than God, why?
I don't need that stuff. But yeah. I'll advise, but I ain't running anything.
Yeah, yeah, that would be my attitude.
Guy, you're the when you're on a board, you're the guy with the Rolodex, I'm thinking.
I'm actually more like dad.
Really?
I'm more the person
you
smacking
kick butt?
People around. Yeah. 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 I have a great Rolodex, don't get me wrong, but people when I'm on a board, I really serve the devil's advocate job. And I also I can really do biz dev for a company.
Yeah.
I mean, I connect the company with almost anybody.
Right.
Like, you know, for example, Amber.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Everybody wants to get to Amber MacArthur.
Right.
So,
you can connect them. You know her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad she has more than just that one black t-shirt. I mean, she had about 5 avatars all in the same black t-shirt.
I know.
It was very disturbing to me. I was at the Vancouver Olympics. I bought her T-shirts from the Olympics.
You're a very kind man. You're a generous, kind human being.
I'm always thinking of Amber.
What are you excited about besides Google Plus? What technology coming down the pipe gets you excited these days?
You know, when you're 57 years old.
You're not 57 years old.
57 years old. What can I tell you, Lee? Why would I lie? Am I high?
You look like you're 34.
Well, that's because, you know, it's high definition.
It's
a bad
Skype connection.
It smooths the wrinkles.
I'm using AOL dial-up right now. How about you? I truly, you know, Google Plus is the most enchanting thing I've seen in a couple years.
Social use. How about, let's talk about hardware. You know, Amazon just made some big announcements. Amazon's really making a play.
They're pulling ahead here. This Kindle Fire thing, so it's, what is it, $2.99?
No.
$1.99.
Okay, so $1.99, color, 7 inches, all that stuff in the cloud. Too bad it's not 3G, but I understand that. So, you know, I don't know if you're a power user, you're going to switch from that, from an iPad to that. I doubt that. But let's face it, many people are not power users, and an iPad is 95% a reader, right?
And $300 more.
Yeah, and $300 more. And I have to say that, you know, everybody's focusing on Fire versus iPad. What I think is the really interesting play here is with a $200 Kindle, and they also lowered the price of the other stuff, right?
Right.
I'm telling you, if I were a New York publisher based on paper, my poo would be coming out in bricks right now.
Well put, my friend.
Because this is really the death of paper. I mean, it may not be the death of paper, but paper will be so marginalized after this, right? And, you know, Leo, you know, you and I are both published authors. I cannot tell you how frustrating it is. My publisher cannot sell, for example, someone 500 copies of Enchantment as an ebook. Literally, there is no way to do it. Mm. I am just astounded at the issues that, you know, have surrounded ebooks. And so, for all you authors out there, there's a book, an ebook I recommend you read called Be the Monkey. And it's written by this guy named Barry Eisler, E-I-S-L-E-R. And he is a thriller writer. He has the John Rain character, R-A-I-N. So his books, John Rain is this Hapa. Hapa means you're half white, half Japanese. Judo expert, CIA operative kind of guy who goes around murdering people, like the ultimate Japanese American killer.
Which, by the way, that's what Barry Eisler did early in life.
He was
a CIA operative.
Really?
Yeah.
And so he has written this book about why his latest book called The Destination is an ebook and how it came out probably a year earlier because he did not use paper-based publisher. And I just read The Destination. All the novels I read on an iPad. I have not bought a paper-based novel in 2 years.
Wow.
And the only paper-based book that I bought in the last 2 years are The Chicago Manual of Style, because I wanted it on my shelf.
Nice thing to have.
And I also bought a Nikon D7000 book. How to use a D7000. I bought that in paper because I thought I would sit around, you know, in front of the swimming pool and read that book. But I regret that. I should have bought it as an ebook because then I could always have it with me when I have questions about my camera.
Now, should the publishers be worried about this, or do they stand to make as much money or more off of ebooks?
Well, I mean, you know, in a perfect world, so Enchantment has a suggested retail of $26. Street price is $18. The ebook version is almost the same price. If I were pricing it, if Penguin said to me, "Guy, price your books the way you think they should be priced," the ebook version of Enchantment would be $6.
Yeah. There's no printing. There's no truck.
There's no nothing.
There's
it would be $6.
Yeah, it's bits.
A little bit of bandwidth.
And you want 50%.
Right, and they might say, well, it's going to cannibalize the, you know, $14.99 price. And I would say, I don't think so. There's two kinds of people. And so I think the publisher, you know, what publishers bring to the party is they are able to move large volumes of paper from R.R. Donnelly to your local Barnes & Noble or Borders.
That's right.
Except there's one problem. There aren't any more Barnes & Nobles and Barters. So what they're good at is moving paper to bookstores. There's no more bookstores. Yeah. So the question becomes, what does a publisher do? So what does an author need? An author needs an editor. An author needs a designer. Mm-hmm. An author needs a book design, a cover designer. An author needs copy editing. And an author needs marketing. That's the stuff that publishers should provide. But they keep focusing on, you know, they define their business as we move large dead trees to large dead entities. There are two things wrong with that equation. And so, you know, it's like the example I like to use is the ice business. So there used to be an ice harvesting business where Bubba and Junior cut blocks of ice, right? So guess what put them out of business? The ice factory. Now it didn't have to be winter. You didn't have to live in a cold city. What a concept. Then what happened to the ice factories? What put them out of business? The refrigerator. Now you didn't have to go to the ice factory or go or have the ice man deliver ice to your house. So we went from ice harvester to ice factory to refrigerator company. Publishing right now is an ice harvester.
Yeah. Well, and is Amazon set to become the new publisher? Because they can provide all of that marketing. They just need to beef up their editing and their copy editing services, and they're in.
Oh, yeah. Or even if they don't provide that part of it, you know, for $500, you can get anybody to edit a book, right? For $500, you can get a cover designed. For $500, you can get it laid out. So, you know, call it $1,000. For $2,000, you can create a pretty decent ebook.
That's how Lulu.com works, is they just say, hey, pay for all that stuff. We'll put you in touch with editors and designers.
Yeah, and then, now, the ramification of this is that every author has to think of himself or herself as an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, guess what? You're responsible for not only making the book and writing the book, but for selling the book. And, you know, publishers used to convince authors that we are your marketing arm, we are your sales arm, we're your distributor, right? And Penguin has great people. I'm not complaining about Penguin at all in all that they did. But the fact is that as an author of an ebook, you have to assume that role because there's not going to be anybody getting your book into Borders, well, frankly, because Borders doesn't exist. So now the author has to become the entrepreneur. And the author, it all comes back to Google Plus, Leo. The author has to understand social media because
Absolutely.
That's the way you sell books today.
It's not just books. It's music. It's video. Everything. It's every creative enterprise.
The artist has to become an entrepreneur. And I hear this complaint from musicians, from writers. But I don't want to do that. I just want to make my art.
Too
I don't want to have to do the business side.
Too bad.
Well, then God bless you. You know, you'll be working at night at Starbucks. I mean,
if you want to do your art.
Yeah, make your
what
choice.
One last question for Guy Kawasaki. Yes. What do you tell your kids? How old are your youngest is six. How old's your oldest?
Six, 9, 16, and 18.
So you've got a great range there. What do you tell your kids to prepare them for the future of work, their future lives? How do you get them ready for that?
You're kidding, Leo.
You got a minute?
Wait, Leo, let me just ask you something. You're telling me you sat down with your kids?
I
and
do.
You said,
I have.
I'm gonna help you prepare for your future.
You know what I tell them? I say it doesn't. I'll be happy if you're happy. All I ask of you is to find what you love and to do it.
Amen. So, what I've told my kids is master Facebook and social media. Like every other.
That's true.
Every other parent is telling them, be careful. Don't post pictures on Facebook, you know, because the Stanford's admissions office is going to go look at your Facebook thing and conclude that you're drug-using, stripping drunkard, right? And I really think that social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or Google+, is a really great marketable skill.
Yeah.
And I'm third generation Japanese American, so you know my kids will be fourth generation, and it's different, right? So my parents came over merely trying to survive, and so now I've more than survived. I've been very fortunate, and so now my kids have a different, you know, sort of set of constraints, and I completely agree with you. I think I would like them to pursue what they love. You know, maybe that's not going to create a whole generation of aggressive, hungry entrepreneurs.
Maybe it will, though. Wait a minute, though. Because some people, what they love is starting businesses, running businesses.
Yeah.
I think there's enough people that we can fill most jobs. Maybe there's nobody who loves digging ditches or tarring roofs. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there are plenty of people who aren't going to get an education, and those people are going to end up doing that. But if you're educated... You learn how. I think you're really right, Guy. You got to market yourself. You got to be comfortable with the idea that you got to put yourself out there, and then you got to find out what you really love best,
or be willing to outsource it to somebody who can help you out. Just you let someone edit your book.
That's
maybe
a good
you let
point.
Someone coach you.
Some people are better
media.
At social media than other people. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have this conversation about Facebook all the time, and people ask me, you know, what do I recommend? I said, you know, you guys are all approaching Facebook wrong. Everybody's saying Facebook is so dangerous. Employers are looking at it. Colleges are looking at it. You have to be really careful. The way to play the game is, you know that colleges and employers are looking at your Facebook presence, right? So knowing that, what you should do is you should post the picture. Here I am building a church
Absolutely.
In Guatemala.
Absolutely.
Here I am, you know, at the Northern California Football Championship. Here I am visiting the museum at MIT on technology. Here I am with my buddies as we won the science fair. So, you know, people are looking at your Facebook profile. Use it as a marketing device. Don't hide it. I mean, I don't understand. What can I say?
Well, you can say good night. Thank you, Guy Kawasaki. Enchantment is his most recent book, GuyKawasaki.com. But forget all that stuff. Just go to Google Plus and circle Guy Kawasaki, because he posts great stuff there like every 10 minutes. Every 10 minutes. It's incredible.
Thank you, Leo.
So great to see you again, Guy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Guy.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Take care, Guy Kawasaki. Take care. Thank you for joining us, everybody, for our... I love this show because it's about ideas. I do want to put in a plug very quickly for something else I love more than life itself. No, I can't say that, but I do love it. It's Netflix. Netflix streaming. I want you to go to netflix.com/twit and get it free for 30 days. That's a 30-day free trial. It's only $7.99, and the streaming movies are incredible. Oh, look, Futurama. Oh, look, The Messenger. Oh, look, Mad Men and Family Guy. Oh, look, Breaking Bad. I love watching Breaking Bad on that. I was paying for it, and they just put it on the Netflix.
I know. I had the same thing.
I'm so happy. Well, I only bought the first two seasons, so I'm watching season three right now. Look, this is the idea. Don't pay. No, don't stop getting DVDs. Stop paying for any. Pay $7.99, and I guarantee you every night there will be something worth watching. Apocalypto, Mel Gibson, that's got to be wild.
Expendables,
I haven't seen that.
Actually.
But so you don't want to buy, to be honest... You really don't want to take a chance on going to the movie store, going to the Redbox, because what if it's crap? But on Netflix streaming, you just press a button.
Yeah.
You watch. If you don't like it, there's something else. I feel like you're willing to take more chances on movies. I've seen a lot of movies I would have never seen. Great documentaries, great TV shows, and, of course, movies, too. It's all there. Netflix.com/twit. If you are already a Netflix subscriber, I know you are. Of course you are. But if you aren't, do it. And if you already are, tell somebody, just one person, maybe that person at work, a mom, a cousin, netflix.com/twit. Make sure they go to netflix.com/twit and give them that 30-day free trial. It's like a gift. It's a Christmas gift. We do this show Wednesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. That is 2300 UTC on twit.tv. We've got some great people coming up, and we did. We are attempting to book Jeff Jarvis because his new book is out. We want to get him on, even though he gets plenty of airtime on Twit.
But we just to talk about Kevin Marks for next week.
Kevin Marks next week will be great. I wanted to get him on, too. Of course, he's a regular on many of our shows because his career path is amazing. From the BBC to Apple Computer to British Telecom and now at Salesforce.com. Anyway, some great people coming up. We thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time on Triangulation.